Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And we're going to go over to the Phoenix Park right now and talk to Richie. Richie, good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you.
Richie Ryan. God, that was a name from my childhood. He was the finance minister that everyone wanted to have a go at.
And everyone had a go at me as well. I'm afraid it wasn't a good name to carry in those days. Better times have come.
Indeed, indeed. So tell us why you are in the Phoenix Park right now, Richie.
Well, we're in the Phoenix Park right now to meet my retired colleagues from the survey who have over 40 years experience, each of them. I'd say everybody that worked here has worked for 40 years.
Okay, Richie, sorry to interrupt you there. There was a tiny dropout in the line, so I don't think we quite caught where you had all those years of service. It was the Ordnance Survey.
Ordnance Survey in the Phoenix Park.
Right.
And the Ordnance Survey is 200 years old this year, and in fact it's June. And as retired staff, we wanted to celebrate the day. And we were hoping that we could go into the Ordnance Survey, where most of us had spent over 40 years, and spend half an hour there, just inside the front gate, not go through the buildings, not do anything like that, not interfere with anything, and just celebrate the day and say a last farewell, because the survey is leaving the Phoenix Park over the next number of years, and there'll be very little work done in the future, and we just wanted to make a final mark. So we requested that, but we were refused.
And what were you going to do once you got there, Richie? What was the
Very little. We were going to meet. There has been a book written recently about the survey, which a lot of the lads have bought, lads and lasses have bought, and we're going to distribute that on the day in the survey, have a brief chat, walk around the outside of the park, not the inside. We know we couldn't do that, and we had no intention of doing that. So that was the plan. The plan didn't work because we were refused entry to the survey. And that was disappointing and surprising for us.
Were they afraid you were going to run amok, Richie?
They probably weren't afraid we'd run amok, but a 7-year-old running amok in the Phoenix Park is a fairly rare sight, and I don't think we'd have risen to the occasion. They had a number of reasons, but in fairness, none of them seemed particularly valid, and certainly for the half hour that we would have been there, it would have been no issue at all. As it happens, we're meeting outside the gate, because the meeting is far more important than what anyone in Tailteann Éireann or management say. So,
and I'll stop you there now. Who is Tailteann Éireann?
Tailteann Éireann is a new body which has been set up to draw together the three main our place, the planning, the valuation office, and the land registry office are all connected under one body now, which is a sensible move and the right thing to do. They've always been connected. Now they're very connected.
So this is a quango or whatever, a government body that is the overseeing, the umbrella body for yourselves and those other valuation, land-related...
Yeah, couldn't have put it better myself.
Government services, okay.
And didn't.
Okay, so they're in charge. They're fairly new then, aren't they? The Tailteann Éireann.
They would be new. They would certainly be in the last year. It's been ongoing for about 3 or 4 years, maybe longer, but it's finally come to fruition now.
Okay. And yourself, how long are you out of the Ordnance Survey, Richie?
2012 I left.
Right.
So, having joined in 1969.
Oh, wow. So you go right back.
Right back.
And tell me, for people who might not be familiar with what you do there, I mean, most people will have seen Ordnance Survey maps at some stage of their lives, what exactly did the staff up in the Phoenix Park do?
Well, we made, I suppose, broadly speaking, two kinds of maps. And we produced a map from the very start to the final printing and selling of a map. Everything was done in-house. And I worked on large-scale mapping. Small-scale mapping would be the more the colour maps, the ones you would see in the Leaving Cert. And apologies to any Leaving Cert students listening today, but it wasn't our fault. But large-scale mapping is where we came into our own, where I came into my own, and where most of the survey worked. And that would involve taking, in the early stages, an old 25-inch map, that's a 1-2500 map, which would cover rural areas. Mm-hmm. We would take an old map, which would be about 30 to 40 years old, and you would literally walk the land, crossing streams, fences, ditches, houses, and supplying every new house, every change of stream, putting in every new house that you could find, which was every house there, and making any changes to the map that were needed. So by the time you finished, you had an up-to-date map of the area.
What a great job.
It was a wonderful job. To some extent, it was like getting paid to have a hobby, and it was great. I think anyone who worked on it, you had to love it to do it, because if you went out to work, you worked on your own. You didn't see anybody from one end of the day to the next, and nobody knew if you were at work or not. But they certainly knew when you handed in your work at the end of the week or the end of the month. And you'd certainly know for years after as well, because you signed every piece of work you did. And if you signed it, you could be held responsible. Even 10 years later, it's not been unknown for people to get a letter asking them to explain why they left a fence out in a field in Galway.
Because there are
10,
obviously
years before. Yeah.
Well, there are huge implications for letting things out or not marking
things. Absolutely.
I know I did some work some years ago on mountain topography and ordnance survey maps,
yep.
And obviously,
yep,
that's hugely important if you are flying.
Absolutely, and I think we were at a lower level. I'd have to say we weren't on the mountaintops, because large-scale mapping was kept kept away from the mountaintops. Mm-hmm. There was no need for it there. It was a different kind of mapping needed. But you're right. Accuracy was the keynote of everything we did, and there was a good deal of pride in the work we did. And there still is, I think, today.
You probably know things about this country, actually, that only somebody who literally walks the land could possibly know.
There's an element of truth in that. You certainly get to have a very intimate knowledge of small areas of the country. I worked in, let's say, Meath, Kilkenny, Galway. And there are places you swear you'll never forget. Little back roads, little corners, stately houses. All these things that you meet on good days and bad. Not every day on the field is good. Not every day is sunny and shiny. But on the good days, it was heaven on earth. And it was.
And tell me, if I were to blindfold you now and drop you into a county in Ireland and let you start walking, would you quickly be able to figure out where you were from the differences in topography around the country?
I think I'd do a pretty good job of not getting lost. Although part of our job was to be a little bit lost and to find your way around when you were left. Well, that is actually what happened every day. You went to a part of the country, you had a map of that area, and you walked it. So you had to find your way away from it to the extremes of that map, and find your way back to where you started and pick up everything along the way. So it was a natural sense of direction built into it.
I know that you were saying that you would have come across things like, you know, poignant markers, like, you know, the...
Well, there were poignant markers. Galway, in particular, was one that surprised me, in that I couldn't get over the number of children's burial grounds there were out there. And that wasn't common in the rest of the country, or the rest of the country that I worked in. There would have been graveyards there, certainly, and always very interesting place to find. But a children's burial ground is something unique to Ireland, I think, and it is a very poignant thing to see. And they've never really been forgotten. They're marked on the maps, which is very important, I think, because there's no record. You can go back and look and find and see. But I think the locals would always have been aware of them, and they're treated with a good deal of respect.
Are you? Do you have permission, basically, to walk anywhere? Can a landowner,
yes,
say to you, "Sorry, not today"?
He can say, "Sorry, not today," but you can also say, I'll be back tomorrow. Yes, you do have the legal right to enter any land to do what has to be done. And in fairness, very few people objected. You would get, I suppose, minor objections working in cities where people are more suspicious, understandably suspicious, and can't understand why you need to go into their back garden to measure their fence. But the larger landowners, the larger farmers, were generally aware of the job you were doing and why it needed to be done. They were quite surprised to see someone actually doing the job, but that doesn't mean they were shocked. And they were very interested in most cases, and were interesting people as well. So it made a great social job of it.
Okay, let's go back to the situation you found yourselves in now up at up in the Phoenix Park today. So you're outside the gate.
Well, I'm not quite outside the gate yet. I stopped to have a chat with you, I'm inside the gate.
You're on your way. You're on your way.
There shortly. Yeah,
you're on your way to the gate. But you've been in correspondence with Tailte Éireann and the minister, actually, haven't you?
And the ministers. I think we've made contact with. I certainly made personal contact with the minister and. I think you might have seen a letter sent from them. Where
I'm just looking at it now. Yes.
Yeah, it's not the minister's responsibility to be involved in the day-to-day running of the survey or Tailte Éireann. Now, we absolutely understand that. We also contacted Jack Chambers, who may have had one or two other things on his mind the last couple of days.
Indeed.
And I'm sure he has made advances for us. But it is a final decision of the local management. And not the local management at Phoenix Park, but the local management.
And what they're saying, just to say, that they're saying that there's works ongoing there and that they're concerned that these works include the removal of asbestos.
Yes, absolutely. That did surprise us. There is asbestos on site in our old print building, which is actually a new print building. But, there is asbestos there. It is being removed. It hasn't interfered with any of the staff working on site today. And there are quite a few staff in Ordnance Survey today. It hasn't interfered with them. Tailte Éireann, to their credit, did organise a number of public talks during June for the anniversary. And there were, I think, 50 to 60 people in every Thursday night for those meetings. And asbestos didn't seem to be an issue for them either.
Yeah.
I think we're at much risk at the gate as we would have been inside the gate. And I would say in both cases, it's at no risk.
So you're basically saying if they can have 50 or 60 members of the public into the building for public talks, why not have the actual people who worked on the maps, who actually did the work over all those years, and allow you to come in and just see each other and look back over the years and have the reminiscing.
Exactly. And we won't be having all the reminiscences there. There'll be a chat, there'll be a photograph, and we'll leave. I mean, I think there may be discussions going on late into the night, but that doesn't interfere with Ordnance Survey in any way and shouldn't. It would have been a nice thing to do. It would have been cost neutral. We were not looking for anything. A cup of tea would have been appreciated, but we knew we weren't getting that. So we weren't putting any expense into it. And we weren't parking on the premises. We were literally walking in the front gate, maybe 30 metres, doing our little bit. There is a trig pillar based in a replica trig pillar inside the park. We would have sat at that and left. And that would have been the end of that.
God,
they mightn't have even known we were there.
I was going to say, it does not sound like a big ask, I have to say, Richie.
No, it does not seem like a big ask.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the couple of paragraphs here from Tailte Éireann. So this is from the minister's secretary, kind of referring back to what they were told by Tailte Éireann it's understood that large-scale renovations are being carried out of the Phoenix Park offices during the time mentioned. It's further understood these works include the removal of asbestos. A consequence of these works is that the number of available parking spaces on site, as well as the usability of the buildings, are significantly reduced. Therefore, Tailte Éireann are endeavouring to restrict the numbers of people on site, including staff, to the bare minimum for the duration of these works. And I trust that this explains the position. Doesn't really,
well,
though, does it?
Oh, it doesn't explain it. It's a reason why they're making it. I would suspect it's not a penny-pinching exercise, but it's mean-minded, I think. It would have been a small thing. And we did say in our communication with them that this is a good news story. all around.
I was thinking a photograph would be
a bad news story.
Yeah, I was thinking a photograph would be a lovely thing for all of you out there, wouldn't it?
Well, we are going to do that ourselves, and we will do it ourselves. It'll probably be outside the gate looking in, but perhaps that's for the best. It's the only way we can do it anyway, and we will do it. I think it's important, too, if you're talking about the survey, it's not just retired staff. Because of the way it was set up, that you had to join the army first before you joined the survey, up to 1975 or so.
Really? So it was just a branch of the defence forces, really, at the start?
At the start, it was entirely a military order. But then it moved to become a military cum civil service organisation. But the only way in was up to 1970, or 75, I think, was to join the army. So it was a very strange organisation, and that people were not willing to join the Ordnance Survey. It wasn't like joining the civil service. There was a big bar to jump first. So a lot of parents brought sons in, cousins in, all that kind of thing. Grandparents would have worked, would have had nephews, nieces in here. Well, not one, definitely not nieces. But it wasn't unusual for, let's say, to work on a map and find that your grandfather had worked on it 80 years before you.
Oh.
So that kind of thing is a history. And there's been a lot of intermarriage there. Everybody is now, up to that period, are very closely related. And all the retired staff know each other. We've lived together. We've moved various towns together. We've worked together and intermarried together. And from 1975, in fact, there's a very unusual photograph taken in 1969 or 68, shortly before I joined, of the staff. And it's about 80 men in dark suits and white ties, very respectable, looking much older than they were, with one woman sitting in front. And that was the one and only woman allowed into the Ordnance Survey at the time. She was the secretary to the chief.
Oh, and of
now,
course,
since then, that's changed.
Well, of course, you couldn't join the army. There was no female army members or defence force members until the 80s.
Absolutely. So you couldn't get in. And I think most of us believed in our innocence. There was no way you could send girls out on field work. They wouldn't survive. They survived, thrived, and been promoted ever since. And to their credit, they're probably running the organisation now in a lot of cases. So that's great.
Richie, will you just hang on there for me? Because I have a fan of the Ordnance Survey, or at least of maps, on the other line. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
You love maps, John.
I have an absolute passion for maps. I love them. And this date's ripe. I mean, I'm just recently retired. I'm almost 62 years old. But I can remember my father teaching me how to read maps on the bonnet of a car in the Maharees in Kerry, and I think the year would have been 1969 because I was 6 or 7. And it was one of the beautiful old Ordnance Survey maps of the time where the lowlands went from green and the mountains went up through the shades of the deeper shades of brown. And he taught me how to read maps that afternoon, and I've had a passion for maps ever since. I've got, I'd say, 3/4 of the country of the Discovery series sitting in a box at home. And I just wanted to compliment your guests there that the maps produced by the OSI, they rank with the best in the world. They are, the detail is superb. They are so accurately produced, and they're an absolute joy to watch or to look at. I'm one of the rarities these days. Whilst I have Google Maps on my phone, I'll use that maybe once in a while, but I will always revert back to that good old paper OSI map because they tell a landscape story which you do not get on Google Maps, and they are absolutely fantastic. That's my little spiel. Thank you. What else can I say?
Richie.
Well, you can. Yeah, thanks very much, and especially thanks for talking about the small scale mapping, because that's something I'm not expert on in any way. I never worked on or used.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no doubt that we have come across, searching through a drawer in the office, you might find a sequence of old maps that were just sitting there. You look at them and say, this is absolutely beautiful work. And it was beautiful work. They are works of art. There's no two ways about it.
My father was a GP in South Wicklow, and when he got the position there way, way back in the early 50s, One of the first things he bought was an OS 6-inch map of the area where he was going to be working in. And I think that 6-inch map is still folded up in a drawer in my brother's house. But just looking at it, the detail and the streams and the little towns and names, they're absolutely fantastic. And the people who put these maps together originally, going right back to the original 1840 survey, they literally walked the land as you did. And they walked the land with chains and theodolites, and the work the base work. Now, of course, you would put sort of dot the I's across the T's, but a lot of the base work now is done by satellite. But the base work that they did with pen and paper and no calculators, just slide rules, it is fantastic to see what they did. And from those dates onwards, the OSI in the Phoenix Park, you are up with the best in the world. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. I'm prepared to believe you. I think the retired staff who are here will be delighted to hear all that.
Oh, please, pass on the whole thing, yeah.
I'm sure they're listening. There is one very interesting fact about the original mapping of Ireland, if I have a second.
Go on.
There was only one distance measure. Maps have to sit on a framework, and that framework is called a triangulation system. Mm-hmm. There was only one distance measurement in the entire triangulation of Ireland, which is amazing, which proves how great. And that was a Loch Foyle baseline that was measured. It's 8 miles long. It took 2 years to measure. It was retested in the 1960s and it was found to be accurate to within an inch. But that baseline was all angles from that day on.
Mm. So every line on the map is comes from that baseline, basically.
Comes from the baseline.
Exactly. Wow.
From that baseline, there was a mountain picked close by, and there was angles taken to that. So now you knew where A and B was. You could identify C. C and A became the baseline for the next triangle. Yeah. You could keep measuring triangles. You didn't need to measure ground again, because it's very difficult to measure from one mountain to the next. Yeah. It doesn't really work.
May I ask,
so it was a fantastic scientific idea.
Yeah, John, go on.
No. It's not. As far as I know, I've checked up on that. It's not there. Parts of it are there, and the original starting point is there. One has been built over. I think there's remnants of one of them still in the north.
What a shame.
What a shame. But it's typical of what happens, I think. It's very hard to appreciate what you've got until it's gone. And we feel much the same about that today. We're gone. Mm. We know we're gone. And that's fine. We accept that. But the memory of what we did shouldn't be gone. And be remembered. And
the work that you people have done, literally walking the land, measuring every little pond and stream and fence and stone wall, it cannot be forgotten.
No, it can't. But and I don't think it will, but at the same time, our own manager seemed to be a little bit keen to forget it.
Listen, there's obviously, they might be in there now listening to us, Richie. If anybody were to send out an olive branch and offer a cup of tea at the building, would you be still inclined to accept that invitation?
I think we would, and I don't think we'd put Ordnance Survey staff in that awkward position. Tolcha Éireann are not based in the Ordnance Survey. I know we have good relations with everybody inside. I know they'd do more than pour tea out for us if we got a chance. But it would be wrong, I think, to embarrass anyone who's still working into what is our day. Also, we're not trying to celebrate the day, not knock Tolcha Éireann. I think they can do that by themselves. So we're staying well away from that. We're celebrating the day.
Well,
and our people.
On this day, Richie, can we just thank you for all the beautiful, wonderful work you all did over all those years. And I hope you have, despite where it's happening, I hope you get close enough and have a lovely day to mark.
A huge thank you from me and many others out there, my brother included, for the hours and hours and hours of pleasure you've given us. Never mind using maps, just looking at them and browsing them and just the pleasure. A huge, huge thank you from us as well.
Okay. Well, that's much appreciated. That's more than I expected. Well, I think the lads would be really pleased with that.
Go back and tell the lads and ladies that when you get
and
when you get up there. Indeed. Richie, thank you so much. John, thanks for that call.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, this piece by Frank McNally in the Irishman's Diary in the Irish Times yesterday sparked a conversation amongst a lot of us in the office, talking about, he was saying that he'd bought a pastry in Dublin city centre, an almond croissant. He said it was a good one. He said it was a big one, but he said it was a shocking €6.50. And he said you wouldn't pay that in the best cafes of Paris. Well, Martin MacDonald, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You were reading Frank as well.
I was, and I was as Frank. I was as shocked as Frank was to discover that in Dublin, there off Grafton Street, you pay €6.50 for a croissant. It sort of sparked my memories of when I used to go to Paris a lot on business, and I stayed in small hotels. But I always went out for my breakfast, my petit déjeuner, because the small hotels didn't really cater for breakfast. You didn't get your full Irish in these hotels. So I just checked to see if the prices were still the same in Paris, and sure enough, in La Coupole and Boulevard Montparnasse, you can get a croissant for €2.50. In fact, you get a coffee and a croissant for €4.50.
Wow! So Frank was
entirely
right.
It sort of
shocked
me. I know it's a small thing, but it's sort of endemic or symptomatic of how the consumer is being treated really in the country at the moment. I hate to call it a rip-off. It's a bit strange to be charged €6.50 for an ordinary croissant.
I know, that's before you even get to the coffee. And of course, now all coffee seems to be over the €4 mark. Well, certainly, that's what I paid. I paid €4.10 for a coffee the other day, a takeaway coffee. And I was like, God, so that would be over €10 in that instance. It is. I'm thinking like these are little things where the little things that brighten up people's day, maybe it's the cup of tea, the hot chocolate, little treats that were kind of just something that kept you going and cheered you up. But they're now at a point where you really have to think twice if you're going to
yeah, they were coming out of reach almost for the ordinary person if you want to do it every day, you know.
Yeah.
I think the coffee prices are astronomical at the moment. Never mind the croissants. Now, yes. In fairness, clearly, the industry in Ireland, the insurance costs, labour, rents, etc. But they're similar in central Paris. You know, if they can do it for €2.50 in Montparnasse or Place de Vosges. In fact, in Place de Vosges, you can get a cafe croissant for €3 in Cafe Hugo. So I used to go there a lot, so it's just sparked my memory of it. And Frank's piece sort of sparked my memory on that. So it's a bit crazy. You have to pay €6.50 for a croissant in central Dublin.
I do think actually the restaurants in Paris were always, and I spent a bit of time in Paris some years ago, they were always surprisingly good value, I always thought, for the kind of quality of food you would get.
Absolutely. So you could go to an Art Deco restaurant for your breakfast and pay a minimal amount for your full breakfast. You could get orange juice and croissant, coffee and all the rest of it for certainly less than €10.
And you get to watch the world go by as well.
You sit on the boulevard and watch everyone passing by. So it's got that added attraction and for people where you can relax. But, it's a small thing that Frank, but it sparked, I think, as I said, it's sort of symptomatic of how things have moved in Dublin and Ireland recently. You know, obviously the industry will have answers for that, but it's hard to see how that can be justified.
Yeah, €6.50 for a croissant is is pretty pricey. Martin, thanks for that, and for doing the legwork for us around the boulevards of Paris. Molly, good afternoon.
Hi there. Hi.
Okay, what got you talking, or got you wondering? Should I really be buying this?
Yeah. Well, no. What happened to me was it was the lead up to Christmas last year, and as you know, a very expensive time of the year. I'd been out just sort of browsing, looking for some gifts, and I thought I'd stop and get a hot drink in Bewley's. And I sat down, I got a hot chocolate, And then the receipt arrived, and I thought they'd given it to, like, the wrong person, because it was actually $8.40 for the one hot chocolate.
Stop, Molly. €8.40 for one hot chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And was it? It was right. That was the actual cost of the hot chocolate.
Yeah, just one hot chocolate, and it was correct, yeah, because I could see the receipt. It said one hot chocolate, and then that had the price there. So there was no confusion. But I also saw there was kind of a... The guy looked a bit guilty, the poor waiter who was giving me the receipt as well, you know. But
I'm sure you weren't the first person to question that now.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And is that, I mean, was there gold leaf on it, or?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I probably would have savoured it a bit more if I'd known how much I was going to pay for it, you know, because it's kind of a table service, so I didn't fully realise how expensive it was when I was drinking it. It did have kind of standard sort of condiments. It had, like, the chocolate flakes, the marshmallows, and I think maybe some hundreds and thousands, and then it was the hot chocolate. It had those in, like, little containers beside it, but really it was... To me, that's still a pretty standard hot chocolate extra, you know. Like, I don't think it would bring the price up to $8.50, or, you know, basically, you know.
I am absolutely staggered at that, I have to say. $8.40 for a hot chocolate. And you have the receipt.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny. I actually sent it to my sister and she tweeted it and it went a bit viral. And I think there was a bit of a furor about the whole thing, which I was glad about, you know. Because there was a bit of a debate. Some people were saying, oh, you know, Bewley's kind of defending themselves, saying, oh, it was sort of a gourmet drink and it was a dessert and everything. But really, at the end of the day, you know, like... I just think it's very sad because you don't want to feel like when you're in town, you've nowhere to go. And, you know, Bewley's is kind of a nice place because you can sit down there for a while and it's not a pub, you know, and you could sit for a few minutes or half an hour and kind of relax. But if you can't afford to do that, you know what I'm saying? Like, rather than get a takeaway coffee, which would probably be nearly as expensive. But, you know, it's nice to have somewhere in town where you can kind of sit down for a while. And I just think it's very sad, really, that people are being exploited, basically, in that way, you know?
It is. I mean, and Bewley's is, of course, it's such a beautiful place. It's got so much character. It's got those Harry Clark windows. But it used to traditionally, oh God, back in the day, where it was a place where you could go and sit over a cup of tea for hours. And I don't think any cafe owner would want that anymore. But it was always a very comfortable and affordable up until the more modern times. It was a place where you could put down time and meet people, and it was a very, very sociable place. But yeah, you wouldn't be doing that now at the $8.40.
No, definitely not. And I mean, it's very difficult. I don't have much money. Like, I'm a singer. I was just in town. I was doing hair modeling. Like, I just wanted to sit down for a few minutes. And, like, you know, I don't know. It's just if it's not possible even to take a break, that's basically what I was paying for, is what I was trying to say, was to sit down for a few minutes. But and that should, in the winter time, you obviously can't sit in the park or anything. You know, it shouldn't even be something that you have to pay so much for, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Molly, thanks so much for that. Definitely one to mark. Bernadette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, so it's not just Dublin, Bernadette.
No, this is Galway. And I just think that the prices are quite high in Galway for I had pancakes and cappuccino for breakfast there recently, and it came to €14, which I thought was quite expensive. And I suppose I was actually in West Cork last week. I was in Clonakilty, and I stopped at a lovely kind of cafe at the edge of the supermarket for lunch. And it was really good food, really nutritious food. And it was all under kind of €10, which I thought, this is extraordinary, you know.
That is really good value now.
Really good value, really good food, you know, really good food.
Well, why don't? Do you want to name the place? Do you want to name the places we're being?
Yeah, I think it was called the. It was either called the Olive and the Olive and Fig, or the Fig and Olive.
In Clonakilty, on the outskirts of Clonakilty. Okay, well, let's give them that bit of publicity if they're, because that's what I'm saying. There are places that do manage to keep their prices at some kind of reasonable level, and we should be applauding them.
Yeah, and the food was good food, you know, healthy, good food and appetizing and nutritious, you know. And I actually found that reflected through Clonakilty, because I had another cup of coffee. I was kind of there for the day. That the prices were very good in comparison to Galway, you know.
Yeah, it does strike me though that people wouldn't be getting away with charging these kind of prices if people were like us weren't mugs enough to be going in and paying them. I mean, they obviously charge what the market will bear, and there are obviously people who are happy to pay 14 euro for pancakes and coffee.
Yeah, and I mean, well, Galway is full of tourists at the moment, and I mean, it's a fabulous city, and there's a great buzz there. So they have a captive audience as well going through the streets, you know, Shop Street, Quay Street, down to the Claddagh. And some of the pubs along Quay Street, not every pub would charge high prices, we'll say, but there would be certain ones, you know. I just think because it's lovely to go into places like the previous woman said and just sit down and kind of absorb the atmosphere and look at the crowds strolling by, as you would do in Paris as well. It's part of the holiday or whatever. And they have a captive audience. Now, I was in Ennis last year. Now, maybe last year is too long ago. And again, I noticed in Ennis the prices were cheaper, again, kind of for soup out or for lunch out or, you know, this kind of stuff. So I don't, maybe it's, and Cork City is quite expensive too.
I'm imagining that we're talking about rents and rates for a city centre as opposed to a smaller town. You're probably looking at much higher overheads. To be fair, I suppose we have to be fair.
Yes,
You are looking at higher overheads. And I suppose as well, there is a kind of a feeling that you have to make hay when the sun is shining, literally in Dublin tourists or in, you know, tourist spots around the country. But
even though Clonakilty would be a big tourist spot as well, that's very true.
Yeah. So again, that's extra kudos for that place for managing to keep the prices down.
Yeah, I was really impressed with it, you know, and I do drink coffee out a lot, cappuccinos and that. It's lovely, and I'll continue to do it no matter what the prices are.
You see, this is it. You're the reason we're paying. We're all the reason we're paying this, because we are willing to pay. And the last time I've spent, as I say, 4.10 for a cup of takeaway coffee, I was thinking, this is a lot of money for a coffee. And, you know, if you had two coffees a day, you're nearly up at a tenner, and you're thinking around it, but you're still doing it. As in, you know, you want that coffee and you pay it and there you go. We've ourselves to blame for that, I think. Bernadette,
absolutely.
Thanks for that. That's the story in Galway. Let me bring in, who will I go to next? Anne, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. I think I'm the Anne you want to speak to.
Yes, Anne.
Hi.
You're talking about coffee as well, Anne.
I'm talking about coffee in France.
Oh, okay.
Will I keep going?
Have you got a radio on there in the background, Anne? I think I can hear
it. We have a radio. Should we turn it off?
Would you turn it off? Yeah.
We've turned it off. Sorry.
Okay. No, thanks. So tell me, coffee in France.
Yeah, we're on the west coast of France at the moment.
Oh,
we have a little place
lovely.
Here in the Vendée.
Lovely.
Which a lot of Irish families would know. It would be a place that people come to camping, caravanning, holidays, that kind of thing.
Lovely. Yes.
So very well known, lots of Irish cars around at the moment. And we have coffee every day here in different places around our lovely town. And the price at the moment is 360 or 380 for two.
For two?
Never more.
And this is for café au lait, is it?
Café au lait all the way, served very, very well, great service, great attention, lovely surroundings, sitting, relaxing for less than four for two.
Wow, so literally less than half the price.
Absolutely, and it's consistent. And we've been here for a while. And, you know, it went, maybe it went from 350 last year for two, or 350, yeah, about 350 to 360 now, but no more. And it's intriguing because, you know, the content is the same as at home and the service is at least as good.
Yeah, well,
so people are being paid, you know, being paid a decent wage. They're charming, they're lovely, they're delighted to be serving you. And it's a pleasure at that, and at that price, terrific value.
Well, you know, if there's somebody out there who can explain to us why we are spending or we are being charged what we are being charged for coffee here, because again, it's very consistent here as well, but it's just consistent at
the other end of the scale.
And I would love to know why or, and how it can be justified.
I can't figure it out. I mean, we live in Nace at home, so we have coffee at home, obviously, not quite as often and in such pleasant surroundings necessarily, but we were paying virtually €4 for coffee before we came out, and will be again, I presume, and here it's just half the price.
Yeah, this is it, and I think all of us feel this
when we go away. Slightly intriguing.
Yes.
A little intriguing thing. Your previous caller mentioned the Fig and Olive in Clonakilty, and it happens to be owned by my niece.
Oh,
a pure coincidence.
That's extraordinary. That is extraordinary.
Shout out for them.
Okay, well, she was very impressed with them, for sure, and for the prices that they were able to charge for what she said was very good food. So good on your niece, and thank you for that, Anne.
Good news.
Giving us a little insight into, and great to hear that Liveline is being listened to in the Vendée region of France today as well.
Very clear coverage, terrific coverage here at the moment.
Brilliant. Thanks,
well
Anne.
Done.
Good to talk to you. Farah, good afternoon.
Afternoon to you, Kate.
Okay, we're going to go to Rome now.
Yes. Now, comparing the like to like, meaning only the margherita, not the one with, I don't know, salami or whatever, just margherita.
Uh-huh.
In Rome, it's 10 euro in a restaurant.
Yes.
And here, I hope you're sitting down, is 18, 17, 18 euro.
For a margherita pizza in Dublin, 17 to 18 euro.
And there are two or three pizza places around here, very good one as well, but the price is now 17 or 18 euro. Let's say 17.
And we all know that on a margherita pizza, you've got your pizza dough, your tomatoes, your cheese, and if you're very lucky, maybe a couple of leaves of basil.
Oh, they really charge for that.
And that is some markup, I would have to say, for margherita pizza. And I would imagine, even in the best of places here, it might not quite match up to the pizza you will be getting in Rome, which isn't the cheapest city in the world either.
No, especially when you go around, you know, towards town. You know, on the border, it will be maybe a euro cheaper, but in town, the price are, you know, for the tourist as well, mm-hmm. You never mind, whatever. But it's 18 euro, because I just checked the other day, just out of curiosity, because they were talking about it, and in Rome, 10 euro.
Wow. And are you from Rome yourself?
Yeah, Rome, 10 minutes from the Colosseum, I'm lucky. But you know what made me laugh? Because my father was a mathematician, so I had maths in my head. So I'm forever doing these silly things. Now, they say the price is stabilized.
Yes.
But I tell you why they stabilized. Because, for instance, I usually buy tea in the big box because I'm not going to buy tea every second week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I used to buy was 208 tea bags.
Yes.
And let's say it was 7 euro. Now, the same company, the box is 240 tea bags.
Mm-hmm.
For the same price.
Oh.
Ah. Same with the vitamins. Before used to be, let's say, 250. And now they are 220.
Ah, there's a name for that, isn't there, Farah? Shrinkflation is what they call that.
No, it's dishonesty. Sorry. I don't know, maybe other people don't watch mine, just love to see the compare. And the amount of corn prices is just amazing.
Go
I'll give another silly example.
Go on.
Just, You know when they sell in a supermarket, sorry about that, broccoli, you know, they have the big one wrapped up in a plastic, film, and one kind of, there you pick up how many you want, the heads. People think it'd be cheaper to buy the one wrapped. No, it's cheaper to buy the one loose by half.
Yes, and you're not dealing with more plastic as well, which is the other thing I'd really object to.
Not either, but usually if you do it in plastic, they're almost off because they can't breathe the air. You know, so the plant is, when you open the plastic, it may even not last a day or two because it's, you know, the lack of air for the plant, even though it's cut, the oxygen's still there.
Tell me, going back to the pizza, Farah, do we do good pizza in Dublin?
There are few, not. Let's say 90% no, but there are quite a few that you got to know, and they're very good. But that's the one that is €18. But do you know, there's another thing that is one of my horse hike, whatever it's called, the music. There's quite a few of these places that never mind the price, but I don't go because I'll do a takeaway because, you know, Kate, if you, let's say you and me are going for a pizza, you know, you don't accept music that we're screaming at each other. I always say, if I want music, I go to a concert hall, I go to a jazz festival or whatever. I want to talk. I can't keep talking to, let's say, my girlfriend or somebody screaming at each other. And if you say anything about the music, they say, nobody's complaining. So this all the rest of their music now, I don't go.
Well,
I don't care.
The last, I was at a restaurant at the weekend and there was a DJ on in the corner. And this is the new thing now, Farah. It's not just the Muzak or the music over loudspeakers. There's a whole new vibe now that there's a vibe created by these DJs and... yeah, we're. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we go for less. You know, you go to France, you go to Italy, silence, no music. All the bruise of the people around, very busy talking. Here, you can say to friends, what? You know, screaming from across the table. That's not a pleasure, that's the way. And I remember recently somebody, one of my friends went to this restaurant. He said, you know, Farah, I forgot what about your music. He said, I have no voice for 2 days. Yeah, what kind of pleasure is this?
Farah, thank you.
Thank you. In the National Concert Hall.
Farah, thank you for that. Appreciate that. We'll see what our listeners think about that one. There's a whole other issue, the music in the restaurants and the pitch of it. Nuala, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you?
I'm good. So what did you pay for what?
Well, it was last Tuesday. My daughter took me out for a little treat. We were just out for a drive, but the afternoon is beautiful. We were down in Killarney and she said we went into the Europe Hotel just for coffees. So talk about, I mean, you know, the setting was absolutely beautiful. It was, you know, we were served to our table, just going choice of indoors or outdoors, looking out on the lakes and the mountains. And they said, you go and find your seat and we will find you. So she had a mocha with a beautiful melted chocolate. She said the nicest one she'd ever had. And I had a decaf cappuccino and they were €10 for the two. Now, which is expensive enough, but I mean, we were sitting in luxury. Our table service, they came back and checked on us. Beautiful setting. I certainly wouldn't be happy if I had to pay that for a takeaway coffee. No comparison.
I have to say, I mean, the Europe Hotel in Killarney must be in one of the nicest settings you could get anywhere.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is one of the nicest. I mean, it's a beautiful, obviously, it's a 5-star at least hotel.
Exactly. And I forgot to even say for that, it was actually each of our drinks came with two beautiful little homemade cookies as an extra.
You see, I mean, when you see that now compared to the, what did we say, $8.40 for the Bewley's hot chocolate, that seems to me to be pretty good value, I have to say.
100%. And I think we need to vote with our feet, really. I mean, if people are going to continue to pay those prices, you know, I can see you're going to be charged. I mean, people have to make their voices heard and just don't pay it, you know.
This is it. But that is, yeah, I'm actually surprised, I have to say now, that you would get two kind of posh coffees, as shall we say, in the
Absolutely.
Europe for that. And as you say, you will not get a better view anywhere in the world, I would say.
No. Nobody rushing us, sitting back on beautiful armchairs. We could, you know, stay as long as we like. Came back and just checked that we were all okay. We didn't want anything. You certainly felt you were being treated. So, you know, and also the drinks were beautiful. You know, the both drinks are very nice. So good quality as well, you yeah. know, so... I must say, I think just sometimes the hotels get bad press and put, and I have got coffees on the go. And sometimes, like as one of the earlier listeners said, if you're just in a place you're not familiar with and you're just passing in, you don't expect, you know, to be charged over the odds for something. You just get caught out, really, if you don't check the prices yeah. beforehand. Yeah. Which is disappointing, and especially for tourists.
Yeah, absolutely. Nuala, thank you for that. That's a top tip for people down that end of the world, down in Kerry. We'll take a quick break. We've got plenty more of these coming in, and keep them coming. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, we've got plenty of these coming in now. Trish, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Okay, how did you get caught out, Trish?
Well, myself and three of my friends, we went to a very well-known hotel here in the south of Ireland, and we sat down and we ordered, went to order a glass of wine, and to our shock, we discovered it was €15 a glass.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Yes, yeah, so we were very taken aback. What disappointed us even more, though, was... the three of the girls had been in this hotel a couple of weeks previous, and it was €10 a glass. So we did inquire. We said, you know, why is there such a discrepancy now a couple of weeks later?
Was it, sorry, and was it the same? Was it the house wine, Trish, or what? Was it the same wine? Or
They had a list of wines, mm-hmm. so you could choose. They didn't necessarily have a house wine, just had a list of wines. The cheapest was 14, and then the one we had picked was 15. So when we queried why there was €5 of a difference, they said, well, it's now tour season. And we were annoyed at that, because we just said, you know, that's not what we want to paint a picture of here in Ireland.
So there was the staff absolutely confirmed that they had significantly, by 50%, yeah. increased the price of a glass of wine because we had now gone into tour season.
Yes. So when we asked, it was a young lad asking us.
Trish, I think we might have lost Trish's phone line. Has gone down.
Sorry.
Oh, you're back there, Trish. Sorry, we lost that. Go again.
Yeah, so I was just saying, you know, three of the girls had been there previous. So they said to the young fella serving us, you know, that's a huge increase. And why? And as I said, his response was, well, we're now into tourist season. So we were just very disappointed, and we did say, look, we're not going to be coming here. We would go there, you know, about once a month, meet for a drink, group of friends. But at that price, it was just crazy.
I do think the price of wine, in particular glasses of wine, has completely gone through the roof in pubs and in restaurants around the country in the last year. Just particularly wine, something that... that's the kind
now
of
we, yeah. you know, we'd gone to another bar in again the locality, and they were $6.50 a glass, which was much more reasonable. Now we decided we cancelled that order and said, okay, we'll have a bottle, but again the cheapest bottle was $50, but you know, it was more reasonable.
Yeah, God, that is €15 for one drink.
We were looking at €60 for the four of us, and we just said no way.
Yeah.
But what angered us was that they had put it up
because it was tourist season.
Yeah.
We just felt that's not the image we want to portray.
No, and that is something that, I mean, there we will, there'll be more and more talk about that, I think, as we go through the summer for sure. Trish, thank you for that. Paul, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
You're just back from Spain, Paul.
Yeah, I'm back a few weeks. I spent the winter there, and it was a good winter to go, obviously. But our experience there, and I'm coming at this from a different angle, my experience is comparing prices in supermarkets.
Oh, yeah.
And, for, say, a croissant in a good supermarket in Spain, you're probably paying about 40 cents. You know, the same croissant here is 125. And it's not as if they're flying them in from there. They're baking them in store here. So, you know, how come it can be, it's three times the price here is just what gets me.
There is that thing in Spain where they have these, even the most like bog standard supermarket in, you know, small places, they have these incredible patisserie stalls to the side, baked on the premises, incredible array of pastries and baked goods. And as you say, incredibly cheap.
Yeah, and actually in some of them they even have tables where you can, you know, buy and sit down and eat them before you go. So, you know, and your coffee then is, you know, between €1 and €1.50. And Café con Leche, so it's like the Café Olé that the lady from the Vendée region spoke about. So we would have been in Andalusia in Spain, so in the southwest. And, you know, it just, you resent paying the price here. You know, when you see that, you know you're being ripped off. You know, I mean, labour prices are cheap in Spain, but it isn't. It goes into an oven here, you know, and costs three times, you know, to put it back, put it out on the shelf.
Yeah, $1.50 for a nice coffee is. It's a long time since we were paying those prices here, Paul. Listen, Paul, thank you for that.
I have another bit for you too.
Oh, go on quickly.
That was just mentioned. So if you go into, we go to a nice little restaurant there. A tapas bar, and you can get a nice glass of wine for €2.60. If you buy a bottle of wine in that tapas bar, and it's a, you know, one that sells, you know, the Spanish hams, it's a very premium one. Mm-hmm. You buy that bottle of wine, it might cost you €6.90 for a bottle of wine, and he'll charge you €2 for corkage, and you can drink it on the premises.
God, so, it's like, you know, it's €35
seems to be the standard price, you know, in a restaurant here for a bottle of wine.
Yeah, it's and getting harder now, and it is getting harder to find a restaurant with wine on a wine list for under £30. And it used to be standard, but that seems to be going away from us now as well. Who am I going to now? Alec, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
You're a student, Alex. Alec.
I am. I just completed my undergraduate degree, yes.
You sell coffee?
I do indeed. I run a mobile coffee unit, kind of only for events while finishing my undergraduate. I did it, yeah.
Is it a horse box by any chance?
It is, yeah. It's an old Alfa Williams.
Right. I just figured that out from the name, the Giddy Up Cup.
The Giddy Up Cup, that's me, yeah.
So how much do you charge for coffee?
So when I started in late 2022, I charged €3.50 for a latte for a 12-ounce. So it's a bigger cup than you get in continental Europe. Mm-hmm. It's kind of double the size. But now I charge €3.80, kind of in line with most cafes.
And do you make much profit on a cup then, I thought?
I don't. Well, roughly about 40 cents per latte with different costs to different people and employees and tax mostly, yeah.
So you're only making 40 cents a cup and when you're charging €3.80 per cup. So €3.40, your cup is costing you €3.40.
So I'd like to highlight an Irish Times article written in May by Jamie O'Connell, where he highlights that an average business would get roughly 26.25 cent for a €3.50 coffee. So in all the other costs, the cup is costing them €3.25 and they're getting 26 cent profit. Most coffee shops.
That is extraordinary. 26 cent profit at those prices.
Yeah, and that's quoting it, and then it continues, but the government, if you add up all the taxes, PRSI rates, etc., but paid by business and employees, the government gets 81.25 within, that's tax paid by both employees, the business, rates, rent, etc.
And even at that, I mean, OK, 380, to be honest, is at the cheaper end of what I've seen for coffee recently. But I can't, it's hard to believe. Well, that's out of a 350 cup. Now, I haven't been charged. I haven't seen a 350 coffee for a while. So anything over that then presumably is profit. So.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So you don't think there's any rip-off going on then, Alec, do you?
Well, see, with bigger companies like Starbucks and things, I think the quality is a lot lower, so I think there is a lot of rip-off. But with smaller cafes that supply better quality coffee with ethically sourced beans, I think they should be charging more and people should be willing to pay more.
Yeah, well, I'll have to say, because of course Starbucks would be upset if I didn't, that they would say they have very high quality coffee, Alec. just to put that in there.
As any large company would, but with smaller cafes, with smaller roasteries or smaller sources of beans, with high ethics in their company standards, people should be willing to support that and pay more to support that, I think.
Indeed. And that's how you can justify just a little bit more, or ask people to maybe dig a little bit deeper for your 12-ounce cup of coffee with milk. Alec, thanks for that. I have a lot of calls lining up here and I'm just looking at my clock. Can I bring in John? John, good afternoon.
Afternoon. Yeah, I had the opposite experience to what some have been describing. Yesterday afternoon, I was going from Dame Street to the Quays, and I just had some time to kill, so I popped into a small little cafe in Temple Bar called Megan's Cafe, where I had a cappuccino and I'm not sure what they're called, but it's a kind of a biscuit-like cake, large, round thing, very chewy, and you get them in dark brown and light brown, and the two cost €4.50. Oh. I was actually so surprised that I wasn't sure the lady had heard that I'd ordered two items, so I repeated myself, but it was still €4.50.
That is actually very good value. So you get the cake and the coffee,
indeed,
and all for under
£5. And I said it to them. Yep.
And did she?
I said it to the lady. I said it was a very good value. I was totally surprised, taken by surprise when she told me.
I tell you,
but that's what it was.
It must be one of the last places in town that you can do that now. That's Megan's Cafe.
I recommend it highly. It's only a small little place. It's on a corner there near the Temple Bar pub.
And the cake was lovely.
It was perfectly satisfactory, yes.
Excellent. John, thanks for that. We do like hearing the positive stories as well. Can I bring in Tina now? Tina, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Tipperary, you want to talk about?
Yeah, I was coming from Waterford up to Tipperary and I stopped in a beautiful little village. I'd been there the year before and I bought a sausage roll and sat down and had it. So I said, I'll go into the same cafe. It was closing for sitting down, so I said, I'll take a sausage roll away with me. And she said, that's €4. And I said, would you mind heating it for me? And she said, that'll be €4.50 then. And I kind of stopped and I said, that's never happened to me before. And she said, well, if you'd like to see my ESB bill, I can show it to you. And I said, I'm going to decline, but thank you very much. So I politely declined and left the premises. So I just wanted to share that story. I thought, you know, it was steep.
Yeah, so 50 cent if you wanted heated.
Yes.
Now, again, and I will have to say this, of course, we do know that electricity and energy costs and all that have been a huge, huge overhead increase for businesses. And we know that.
I understand that, yeah.
But I've never come across that before either, actually.
It just stopped me in my steps. And like, I like to support local cafes. I know what it's like for them. But I just thought it was a little bit too steep when I was getting it in a paper bag and probably going to eat it walking down the street, you know, so.
So you said, thanks, but no thanks.
Yes. Yes. So I just wanted to share that story with you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll see you. I wonder if that is something that people are doing now.
I've never heard it before or since.
No, neither have I now, I have to say. But, you know, maybe I'm not getting out enough, Tina. But thanks for that. That was in Tipperary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Where else can we go now? Joan, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Katie. How are you? Lovely to speak to you. I just heard you talking about the restaurants and the price of coffees and that, and I just thought I'd give heads up to Coco's in Saltail in Galway. You get coffee there, a large cup, for $2.50 before 10, and after 10, it's $3.50.
That is very reasonable in today's
world. Yeah, and it's this delicious coffee. It's the best coffee in Galway. Really, cappuccino is what I get, and the queues there, locals, they're always, you see queues every day there. And so anybody coming to Saltail, Coco's on the seafront just in front of the Garda station, so you can't miss it.
Are they any relation to you, Joan? Just so
no
we clear.
No relation whatsoever. relation. It's just I heard the discussion on about the coffee and the price of coffee.
Okay, so well they're, I think $2.50 for a large coffee. Is that a black coffee?
No, this is cappuccino now. I guess cappuccino.
So a large cappuccino. A large cappuccino. If you get it before 10 a.m., it's $2.50.
Before 10 a.m. And after 10, then it's $3.50.
Well, that's our current record, I think. I didn't think there was anywhere you could get a large cappuccino for $2.50 now.
No.
That is.
And I'm just back from Portugal and didn't have coffee like it in Portugal. There's no comparison. So I can't wait to get back to Galway.
Okay.
To go and get my cappuccino.
Okay. Coco's and Saltail. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Joan, thank you for that. A great tip there if you're down Salt Hill way. Can I bring in Mary? Or is it Marie?
Moira.
Right,
if it's Moira, Katie.
Third time lucky, Moira.
Not at all. No problem at all. Lovely to talk to you, Katie.
Lovely to talk to you.
I was just tickled pink, Katie, listening to the discussion on the glasses of wine.
Yes.
A glass of wine no longer is a glass of wine. It's about 2 inches of wine in the bottom of a beautifully large glass. That's what I've noticed. And the price, I was with somebody recently, they had a glass of, I think, Malbec, as I say, 2 inches of wine, and it was €9.
Yeah, you see, I do think, though, we're kind of gone mad with the glasses of wine, as in the size of the glasses that we're now being presented with in restaurants and
pubs. Yes, exactly. They're extremely elegant. Yes, I agree with you. But you're looking at, as I said, not that I don't want a huge full glass of wine, but I think 2 inches of wine in the bottom is slightly, you know, a step too far.
For €9 it is anyway, says you.
Yes. Yeah.
I just thought
I'd add it into the discussion,
and there is the other side of that then, which is actually not great either, is places that give you like a quarter of a bottle of wine in a glass, which I don't think that's a great idea either if you're, you know, just going out
with just a regular size glass and a reasonable amount of wine in it, I think we'd all be very, very happy.
Indeed.
Four things kind of changed. I don't know. But anyway, I just said I'd add it in because I was, you know, enjoying the conversation, enjoying the programme. But I was thinking of the two inches of wine in the bottom of the glass that was €9.
Yeah. That would hurt, all right. Thanks a million, Maura. Thanks for that. Let me go to Danny now. Danny, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
You were in Italy, Danny.
Yeah, actually, I just texted in there, first of all, because I kind of just the degree of cribbing that was going on about people enjoying themselves and they might be paying for the price of it. But like the customer has a choice, whereas the people that run the business, it's not easy. It's a difficult business to run. Not that I'm in business or anything. But I was in Italy recently, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, in Sorrento and Pompeii in Nepal. And mostly it was outdoor seating, virtually 90% of it. But you still want to have a cup of coffee and sat down. They charge you €3 each person, and they add it onto your bill.
It was the sitting down was an extra charge.
Yeah, exactly. You paid if it was two together, you paid €6 for it, and then you're charged for your coffee or whatever you wish to have with it. And then,
but is there not, just to stop you there now, is there not that practice in Italy that if you go into a cafe and you stand at the counter, you can, you know, get your coffee for half nothing at that point. And that's
You could probably take it away, like, but sure, yeah, the value and the enjoyment is different in as well.
But there is so that Italian way where you stand and chat at the counter. That's a whole other experience.
Yeah, but we found actually that 90% of it was that way. And then if you went to kind of a remote place that was off street where they wouldn't have the same footfall and that, they wouldn't charge you. But that was only about 10% of the time, you know?
Yeah.
So I found the prices actually were much the same as Ireland. So, and they were very friendly with their service, with kind of an expectation of a bit of a tip afterwards as well. So the mix was much as you get in Ireland, really, you know.
So you're basically saying stop whinging. Where it's not far away. Fields are not as green as people might suggest.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that is unfair to the Irish side of it. Like is that the whinging about the price of it, but you know they don't look at the surroundings of what has costed them to sit in for their coffee, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, Danny, I'm being told I have to take a break. Thank you for that, Danny. We'll take our last break now.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're nearly out of time, but I want to squeeze in another couple of calls if I can. Aisling, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
I'll ask you to be brief, Aisling. Where were you and what did it cost you?
Oh, I was in Wicklow Town yesterday morning, had a full Irish breakfast, 4 sausages and 2 slices of toast and 2 tea, $26.50. I was shocked.
So, well,
needless to say.
Is it, well, $13.25 for a full Irish plus the tea included? Is it crazy?
Absolutely crazy. And normally I would be one to actually question it, but because of the situation I was in, I didn't question it. But I will be questioning it now when I go back in today.
Yeah, you've got it. You've got the eye up now listening to us.
Oh my God, I'm irate. I would have had a nicer breakfast back in the caravan. I'm on my holiday, so I didn't want to spoil the moment. So I said, no, not doing that again.
Okay. We've one last. Margaret, we're almost out of time. Very quickly, you've a good news story to tell us.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. I'm listening to your...
We're 15 seconds, Margaret.
Okay, just Brew Baker in Frederick Street in Dublin. A pear and almond, homemade scone, butter and jam for $6.50.
Where would you get it?
Absolutely gorgeous, please.
Okay, that's it. That's Margaret gone. And we're out of time on sound today with Mark Dwyer. Our broadcast coordinator was Andrew McDermott, and our producer today was Shannon Gorman. Stand by now for Ray.